What I like is that I can come in my oversized church and nobody cares. Yesterday I got a shock. I wanted to buy this one in XL, but it was too small. Now I have 2XL. If I show my family that I have 2XL, which is now oversized, they think I'm nuts. Anyway. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm not really sure what I'm going to talk about, but we will see as we go along. Just a few words from the family. Ruth sends her love. The family basically is very well. No, that would be a lie. Is well, not very well. Ruth is still battling with her stomach problems. For 5 years going now, we still don't know what it is. Nobody can find out, and it's ups and downs. But she's still moving on. She loves staying in Germany. I don't. So even that one is still moving on. The kids are very well. Our oldest daughter, who turns 20 in 1.5 months or so, she got engaged at Christmas to be married, which is probably going to take place in May or so. Perhaps to the American airman. Which is a challenge because now he's leaving. I think this week he's leaving for 2 weeks to Las Vegas, where he needs to work on airplanes. And then he comes back, is in Germany for a month or two, and then he goes to the Iraq for half a year. And then he comes back and is for about 10 months in Germany. And then he needs to go to Korea for a year without his wife. So it's quite a challenge. But they are so madly in love, and they think this is it. And they need to pursue it, and so who are we? Huh? So that's a new chapter in our life. Matanya is adapting very well now after 2 years of struggle. Mark is in great shape ever since he's 10. He turned 10 here, you might remember that. They can't detect his virus anymore. So we still wait for the peace of God to stop all that medication, etc. He sometimes would love to rather live here, but in any case, he enjoys his friends. He's very well accepted in Germany, so yeah, we can't complain. Ruth is playing guitar. She's getting lessons, and she's really good. I just love listening to her, and it just flows, and she does a lot of playing at home, practicing. Matanya is learning the keyboard. She's still practicing. She doesn't really know whether she likes it or not, but anyway. And Mark is playing his drums. He gets lessons as well. And he got an e-drum set similar to that one here, and every day he's just playing. And he's good. But that's Africans, huh? They have this rhythm in them. Anyway. So now you know that. Yeah, I might be here for, I don't know, what time, the last time. I do not know what's happening. It looks like the season with the company in Benoni, I've been consulting to, might be over. I'll only find out next week when I come back from Zimbabwe, where I go on Wednesday. So I don't know. I just know I have to learn to be extremely flexible, and that I want to be. They have been very good to me, very gracious, very supportive, have done a lot for us, but everything has its time, and we'll see how things continue. Which leads me to something I want to share with you, and then I might jump left and right and to and fro, but I think you don't mind, because you're all very flexible, some more than others. Yesterday I invited your leader of the pack, Francois, for a lunch. So like a farewell, thank you very much for everything type of thing. And as I was speaking to him, he received a phone call, and that took him totally off track. So from that moment on, the conversation we were in was gone. So he is extremely flexible. He is? Huh? Yeah, that's what I meant with it. He was taken aback. He could not come back to where we left off. Anyway, No. Okay, well, we were starting, he asked me some questions, so I started sharing, and then his second daughter, named Janice, called and said, "Listen, Dad, I know I'm supposed to be picked up from the airport today, but I'm not coming back.
Oh, no.
I'm going to stay for another month in Cape Town. What do you say?" Which rendered him speechless. And honest as he is, he said, "You know, my daughter, I love you, but this is something you should talk to your mum about." I thought, that's a nice escape route. Anyway, so, but most of you are flexible, so let's jump to and fro. Yesterday, last night, I was listening to a Nigerian, which is quite extraordinary, because I don't like to listen to Nigerians, because all my experiences are very bad, which is not good, because I shouldn't let my experience determine how the Nigerians were. But this guy was pretty down to earth, and he was a nice guy, a nice chap, had a good message, and I didn't like the way he brought this message across, but the message was good. And part of this message was from Psalm 110, where it says, "The Lord says to my Lord," which is something David wrote, and it's basically saying, God said to Jesus. So it's a prophetic word. And it said, "Sit at my right hand." So God says to Jesus, "Sit at my right hand. Sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet." Now then this guy expounded on this whole issue, and he said, "You see, God is in the carpentry business. That's why Jesus became a carpenter." It's probably not true, but anyway. So he said, well, first of all, you should not be scared of your enemies, because from that verse you know that they are just wood. And God is going to use them to create a footstool for his son Jesus, which is quite an interesting thought. Anyway, he said, now, Jesus is supposed to sit down. Okay? But he doesn't. Or he didn't straight away, because when he rose from the dead, he was invited by his Father to sit on his right hand until the day God has made all of Jesus' enemies into a footstool. But Jesus didn't. As you know, he walked for 40 days on this planet, and he sorted a few things out. He sorted out that those guys, you are laughing, you probably heard that story, that those guys who were supposed to stand up for him but did not, because they even said, "I don't know him," that they finally got the message and started standing up so that he could sit down. All right? Are you with me? Are you following me? If not, it's important. So you better, if you don't understand what I'm talking about, you better let me know. So anyway, for those who are not with me, he used the 40 days walking on this planet before he ascended into heaven to sort the disciples out to such an extent the disciples, that they were prepared to stand up for Jesus rather than to run away, so that he could sit down. Okay, now that happened. Because as we read in Acts, we can see that the disciples actually took on this mantle, that they stood up for Jesus, that they did not back off anymore, that they did not bail out and chicken out and whatever you want to call it. They really did what God wanted them to do. So now Jesus could sit down. Good. I'm glad you're with me. The question is, what about us? Are we standing up for Jesus? Are we standing up for the Lord so that he can keep sitting? Or are we not? We live in a time that is extremely exciting and yet very annoying. I mean, it's frustrating. It's sometimes I think it's just too challenging. It's I'm getting angry about what I see happening around us. I get mad at injustice, at unrighteousness. I get mad at people who enrich themselves. I get mad at those who don't care about others. I don't know. And it's like everything gets darker and darker. Now we speak about it, but the question is, do we see it? Can we put together what we speak about on Sundays or in our live groups or whatever you want to call them, discipleship training schools? I think Francois directed that one to you. So did you have a problem with the live group or what? No, it doesn't really matter. I mean, just kidding. Do we connect what we talk about with our day-to-day life or don't we? I told Francois this interesting story, which I heard. I'm not sure how much truth is in there, but in any case, it's a nice one. You know, where this church is gathering on a Sunday, and they sit there just like always and wait to be fed and get some nice high-fly mumbo-jumbo stuff that carries them through another week. And as they are opening their hearts for the speaker to give them the truth that makes them feel so happy, the door opens and two guys clothed in black from top to bottom with a mask on where just the eyes can look through. How do you call these funny things anyway? What? I said anyway. Those masks. They come in with machine guns. And they shout, "Anyone who believes in God, out." No, stay. Sorry. And some of the staff sitting in front, you know, the elders sitting there in front with the pastors, they quietly disappear. The congregation, I think it's about 90%, disappear. The pastor is looking. I don't know whether there were some priests or what. Anyway, from this 1,000 or 1,500 people, finally there might be sitting 30. And as that happened, and the guys are gone, these guys pull off their mask, throw away their toy guns and say, "Pastor, now you have the right audience. You can start. Let's talk." Sounds funny, huh? But it's true. How often do we go to church and like to listen, but who of us does connect what is happening in the world with his faith, with his belief, with his trust in God, with the message of God? How do we connect? How do we live it? And I'm sad to say, I don't find many people who do that. I find lots of people talking nicely, but they don't do what they say. "Oh, yes, I believe the Lord. Praise you, God." I'm overdoing it, but, you know, they don't praise God, really. Because they don't believe what God has done. They don't worship Him because they don't believe that God is really the one who they profess He is. Because their life shows the opposite. Now, I can tell you, check the prophecies, okay? You know, I have a prophetic edge somewhere. I can tell you, you're in for hard times. You know, those times you're going to approach, make what you have experienced in the past pale, look pale. Is that the right expression? It's not funny, yeah? Somebody coming in and saying this is not funny. But it is like it is. Because if you read this book here, it says that it becomes darker and darker in the final days. We just don't connect what we read here with what is happening outside there. But it's true. It's becoming darker and darker. Now I want to share a little bit about what's happening to us. Not for pity reasons. Not that you feel sorry. But to give you a little bit of down to earth. I don't know, like an example of what can happen and what you have to deal with. It might look a little bit different for you. Here's the story. You know, we don't have an income anymore. If this thing doesn't continue in Benoni, that's it. And the people in Germany don't like to listen to what I have to say, so they won't open up for me, at least at the moment. It doesn't look like this. You know, the invitations I had to various countries have been cancelled. I was supposed to speak in England on 2 conferences, and they said, no, we don't want to hear that stuff. So they disinvited me. So we are in a situation where we don't know where to go from here. Now, this is not new to us. We have been there several times. So you could say, what's this wailing about, you know? You know, to compound this thing, something else happened. We need to order a new batch of medication for our son, which, you know, the church, and in particular Francois with his effort, etc., always helped us to get from South Africa imported into Germany, because we have to pay it out of our own pockets. So that was a very nice blessing. Now we can't do that anymore, because now this medication is available in Germany, so we have to buy it there, which makes the 70 euros we used to spend on medication a month in a bill of 1,400 euros, or if I should translate it to you, it's about 20,000 rand every month. I mean, even with having an income like we used last year, we could not afford that. Now, we don't even probably have an income. Now we have to spend 1,400 euros or 20,000 rand on a life-saving medication for our son, and nobody's paying for it, because there's no insurance taking care. So thanks to the insurers, thank you very much. No insurance wants to cover something that they cannot control. Okay, and so you could say, what that? Do we now have to let our son die, medically speaking? Or what? So what do you do? What do you do? I don't know. There are several options. You know, this is private. Now, I could talk about the company I've been consulting to. They have been on a great track. I shared a little bit about what's happening there, and they really are sold out to the Lord, and they open up. And they had a 3-month period where the managers would meet every morning 1.5 hours and just discuss and speak on the word and encourage one another and pray for one another and da 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 and translate whatever the word is saying into the working context. And now they have split it open, and the managers take on groups from the next level, and they do the same with them. Now every morning you could say, whoa, there's something happening for the kingdom. And yet they are hit by the financial crisis, because all the mines that used to give them the biggest contracts, they have closed down or cut down or I don't know what. And all of a sudden, from nowhere, there's no money no more. Now what are they going to do? So we have 2 options, don't we? Option number 1, become hectic, become frantic, try to pull all the abilities and possibilities together we can see and try to make things work so that somehow either this whole thing is going to be turned around or at least alleviated. And that's what most people do. And that's where even Ruth and I, we were confronted with this just a couple of weeks ago when all this transpired about our personal situation. All the thoughts, you know, can we not go to the government? Can we not go da 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 da? All this stuff, you know, the machinery starts rattling. Or you could do what I did, and because I'm the man of the house, I could put down my foot and, you know, everybody listens to somebody else. No. This time, I was hurt, we could start becoming quiet. I said, listen, we can't do anything about it. Why don't we just allow God to tell us what's really cooking, what's happening. Are you with me? It doesn't seem like you really understand what I want to bring across. But anyway, I try it a different way. Now, when you look at the kings of Judah and Israel, most of the Israelite kings, after the kingdom split, were evil. Some of the Judean kings were good. So most of the Judean kings were evil as well. Now all of them, I don't know how long this whole period was after the kingdom was split, until they both kingdoms went into captivity. You know that Israel went earlier than Judah, and Judah later taken into captivity by the Babylonians. But time and again, the enemy would come and attack Israel, whether the Assyrians or the Philistines or whoever it was. And sometimes, oftentimes, it was an army that was so overwhelming that, humanly speaking, you had absolutely no chance to do anything. So what these evil kings did, because they would not listen to what God told them, because God told them already hundreds of years ago that stuff like that would happen, but He would take care of them if only they would do what He says. Because they wouldn't listen, they did everything in their power in order to fight those enemies. They went into alliances with ungodly kings. They hired armies. They tried to build this fortress. They tried to do that. They did a lot of stuff and it never worked. They were always overpowered. A few, though, just a few, I think it's about five kings only, they were different. They were not God, but they were different. They knew that God is in control. And they would, facing an army of, I don't know how big the proportion was compared to their own, they would not become frantic and hectic. They would quieten down, withdraw, and say, God, what can I do? I have no power against this enemy. I have nothing. I can't fight them. Look at us. Look at these people you chose to be your own. What can we do? And God usually spoke. And He said, you don't do nothing. I'll do. Perhaps what I want you to do is just march out and blow the trumpets, or just go see and watch what I'm going to do, and stuff like this. To such an extent that armies of hundreds of thousands of soldiers would kill each other themselves, the enemies, and they had just had to watch. To such an extent that God sent them to get the booty, to get the loot, and it was so much that the Judean people had to carry it for 3 days. Into their camp. 3 days they had to collect everything. God can do that. People can't do that. You see? Now, we hear these stories and we think, oh yeah, it's Old Testament. Doesn't really have an effect on us. And yet, we experience exactly the New Testament version of that Old Testament story. Because what's happening at the moment in the world is actually going out for our lives. Just like in our case. The heads of family. What can we live on? I don't know. All I can say is, Lord, if your word is true, I want to see. And I want those people to see it. Like this one guy said, listen, Gottfried, I don't understand you. He was watching us for 2 years now in Germany. He says, you don't live like everyone. You live this way. You know? And now God even turns you that way. I can't understand this. Well, I can't understand it either. But that's what is happening. So do we make the connection? Let me give you a few facts. In Germany, the government had accumulated a debt of 1.5 trillion euros. 1.5 trillion, just the government debt. That is half a year ago. Now, with a financial crisis hitting Germany, which, according to the experts, would never happen, never, ever, ever, because we're safe. You see, we are Germans. We are safe. Anyway, with this slight slip of I don't know what coming, they had to add, just to rescue those who messed it up, they had to add another €1 trillion. So now, beginning of January, Germany government is indebted by €2.5 trillion. Thank you very much. But this is not enough. Because when I was sitting on the plane coming here, I heard that there is another trillion on bad debt looming somewhere in the hidden rooms of the banks. So the government has to rescue that package as well, which brings us then to €3.5 trillion. Whoa. And they just dish it out. And you know who's paying the price? Who do you think is paying the price for it? Any guess?
Taxpayer.
Who is the taxpayer? The one who still has an income, right? That is, if he has an income. So the government makes a decision within 6 to 8 months of more than doubling the debt they had before so that they can cover debt, which in itself is, what's the word? It's a contradiction. Now, this is Germany, but we know how it works, you know. Let's look to England. England, you know, the pound, the strong pound, it dropped by about 40%. Did you know that? In value. It's almost on par with the euro. It used to be 1.45 euros or 1.5 euros to the pound, and now it's 1.05 or something like that. Now, that is bad enough for the British. But the British are even cleverer than the Germans. They have managed to pump all sorts of monies into the market now to rescue, because that's what you do. If you don't know what you do, you just print money and give it into the market. And they are in such a difficult situation that not only do many people lose their jobs, they are now talking about reducing the work week from 5 to 3 days to create jobs for those who lost their jobs. Now, that doesn't do really very much, because if you share the income, the demand you or the money you can spend is still the same. So the problem is not solved. It's more evenly spread, if you like, but it's not solved. But that's the Europeans. It's far away. So let's look at the U.S. The U.S., our strongest savior of the world, actually. Did you follow all those nutcases who were celebrating about Barack Obama being the savior of the world? And, you know, I didn't see anything of it. I didn't want to, because this is idolatry, pure idolatry. It's unbelievable, and nobody sees it. Even the Christians say, hail to Obama. I can't believe it. Anyway, so this nutcase in the U.S., I'm sorry, I'm out of line here. So this man, he inherits something really good from his predecessor. I think some of you who remember what I shared in the past couple of years or so, whenever I had a chance, they know that Bush, in the first 1 or 2 years after the so-called terrorist attacks, He accumulated more debt for the whole nation than all the presidents in the previous 200 years did together. But that was just the beginning. I don't know how much he accumulated until, I think he made about $8 trillion in debt. So Mr. Obama is now inheriting a little package of $10.6 trillion government debt. And he's talking about on splitting out another $700 billion or something like that, so bring it to $11.3 trillion, so that he can start rescuing all those guys who have been so greedy and so corrupt that they brought everything down. Now that's our strongest economy in the world, Okay. You might remember that 2 years ago when I held the seminar, we had already accumulated worldwide about 150 trillion US dollars in debt worldwide. And you wonder who do we owe it to? But I think today we speak more about 180 trillion, something like that. Anyway, it's just numbers. So anyway, let's not be carried away with that. Oh, some water, that's good. Let's carry you away with some water. Wash all that stuff away. Ignore it, and it's disappearing. Now, what I want to say with this, I mean, even here in your country, Francois mentioned it, we are safe here in South Africa, aren't we? Yeah? They even tell you stuff, you know, what's the problem? We have the World Cup coming. No problem. You know, when the World Cup comes, which costs you, I don't know how many billions you have to spend in order to just host it, costs you a fortune, then you have perhaps 500,000 people coming here. That is, if the economy stays the same as we have it at the moment, which I doubt. So if it's going to go down the drain, you might get 200,000 people coming and visit. And do you think they spend 2 billion, 5 billion, 10 billion, I don't know how many rands you spend, just to recover the cost you've spent so that you... That's ridiculous. Anyway, but you don't have a problem here, really. You don't. I believe what we experience in our modern times today is like an onslaught God's people have been experiencing in all the Testament times, with all the enemies coming in with their armies. It's an onslaught because it goes right to the life wire. It goes to, will we survive or not? What will you do if everything falls apart? Now, in Germany, in England, in America, and wherever you go where this thing hit off, we have seen that bank, that insurers, that institutions that were considered to be the most solid ones in the world, they fell apart within a week's time. Where can you put your trust in? Where do you put your trust in? Is there anything that you can still put your trust in? And I dare to say there is nothing. Nothing human-made that can rescue you. Everything you believe is safe is probably going to be turned upside down. What then? The question is, do you believe that this is going to happen, or don't you believe? Now, at the moment, I'm reading Jeremiah. I'm not in favor of Old Testament prophets. I thought reading these guys is just so dry. After the first 10 verses, I fall asleep. It's true. I never touched them. Now, when I read through the Bible from cover to cover, which I did, I think, 2 or 3 times, I had to read them. But that was a quick job. Quick, 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 quick. Often, you could ask me 5 minutes later, what did you read? I don't know. I just read it. But in the past couple of weeks, or past 3 weeks, Jeremiah became very dear to my heart. And I can't stop, I mean, if you look in the Bible, I can't stop highlighting things and writing something in the margins. And there's constantly, there's something that really speaks to me. And you know what speaks to me is that there is a prophet, somebody who speaks for 4.5 decades the same message time and again. That encourages me because I think I'm speaking what I'm speaking about, I don't know for how many years now, 5 perhaps. And I think people are sick and tired of hearing it. Most of them don't want to hear it in any case, but those who are listening and those who can't escape like you now, they hear the same message time and again. You know, this morning I was thinking, what can I tell them? Still the same story. The story I told you 2 years ago. The stuff I tried to bring across 1.5 years ago. The stuff I tried to bring across when we left. The stuff I tried to bring across when I did the seminar last year here. The stuff I try to bring across whenever I'm invited to speak. The same message. And I think I'm boring. So what? This guy talked for 4.5 decades to the people the same message. Now he must have been, I don't know, in places where, God, they don't even listen to me. And God said, I want you to speak to them. But they don't listen. Speak. I have the same. So, God, they don't listen to me. Speak. So I speak. So I speak to you. I'm not Jeremiah. I don't know how much of truth is in there. But I'm convinced from what I've seen, I'm convinced from what I believe God is showing me, we are in for a hard time. The question is, are we listening? Or do we do what Israel said and said, ah, forget about it. Ah, come. I'd rather gather some people around me who tell me what my itching ears want to hear. It's going to be fine. We make it. We make a plan. You know, we invest in this, or we do that, or we set up this, or we make a plan. Or are you listening? And what is Jeremiah preaching? He's preaching, turn to God. Because if you don't, the Babylonians are coming. They will carry you away. They will kill you. They will slaughter you. They will burn down the city. They will take your women. And this is the end of the story. No, I hate this message. And you know, this guy, he really had hard times. I don't want to read it all to you, but he was imprisoned. He was thrown into a cistern which was just filled with mud. So he was drowning. Because he said what he said and the people didn't like it. They didn't like what he said. Throw him away. And he said, God, man, you told me I must tell you. And you promised to me that if I tell them what you tell me, I must tell them, you save me, you rescue me. And here he is imprisoned. They want to kill him. I don't like what you say. The king, Zedekiah, the fourth one he served under, he said to him, I don't like what you say. Are we prepared to stand up so that Jesus can sit down? Are we prepared to carry a message? Are we prepared to carry the truth? Are we prepared to carry whatever God has given us against all odds, even if they do want us do, even if they do us harm? Are we? If we do not believe what's written in here, we won't. It's not nice. It's really not nice. I'm sorry. It's not nice. What's lying ahead is not nice, but it's a sifting process. That's what we shared yesterday as well. It seems like God is sifting a sheep from the goat. We're just talking, or do we put something to it? Do we stand up? Do we trust in God? Where do we put our trust in? My favorite verse, you know it, one of my favorites. Matthew 6:33. If you seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness first. So if that is your priority, then what? Sorry? Hey. Sorry, excuse me. Then everything will be added unto you. What is everything? What? Yeah, what is everything? All that, he said. He didn't say everything. Sorry, I was misleading you. He said, all that will be added unto you. What is all that? What is Matthew referring to? Or Jesus?
Like,
yeah. Because Jesus was expounding in this whole chapter, he was saying, listen, it's the heathen, those people who do not trust me, those people who do not make me or the kingdom of God their priority,
They are worried about what will we eat, what will we drink, what will we wear, where will we sleep. And then he said, not so you. If
you seek the kingdom of God and all his righteousness first, all these things, bracket, the heathen worry about, bracket, will be given to you.
Are we really there? Have we started? Do we allow God to be God? Have we started putting our trust in God and God alone? Or do we still cling on any scheme, from insurance to pension funds to I don't know what? Do we?
It's not going to help. I can tell you, it's not going to help. I'm going to Zimbabwe on Wednesday. These guys, they know what it is. If you have worked all your life for your security, and when you get it paid out, it just buys you one meal. Thank you very much. They have seen how institutions, how insurers, how this, how that, everything we put our trust in and put our security and safety in can fall apart in a matter of days. And what then? Are we there where Israel was when they walked into the desert, the stuff they had nothing in control anymore, under control anymore, in a country or in a countryside, in a setup where they couldn't even do anything with their own hands in order to provide for themselves? Are we there that we can say God is still able to just call manna down from heaven? And we have. Are we in a position that we say if there's absolutely nothing anymore that man can provide, God still can? We need to answer this question. I believe we have to. And if we haven't settled it, we better get going quickly. Because what is rolling here towards us is a tsunami. Something that is so destructive that it happened so quickly that we can't do anything afterwards anymore. It's like what the Bible refers to as the Babylonian system, where people have enriched and enriched themselves with, that's going to fall apart within a matter of an hour. And we are busy heading for it. Now you can say, Godfrey, this is a madman. Or you can start reflecting this back to God and say, is that right? Do I find that stuff here? A couple of pastors I stayed with last night from Zimbabwe. One of them prayed yesterday in this gathering and said, God, help South Africa not to walk the road we walked. But you know what? You're busy heading for the same direction. So what are you going to do? Where do you put your trust in? I'm extremely challenged. I'm challenged in our family setup because I don't have answers except, God, you said. I'm challenged in my work because I need to tell business people, rather than becoming frantic, slow down. Instead of doing anything, everything, and all the things you think you can do, ask God where you should spend your energy in. Are you with me? Rather than the kings who said, we still have this power, I still have money, I can use it, utilize, and they even used God's money, the treasures from the temple, to buy foreign armies. Instead of doing all that, instead of making a plan, Burr makes a plan, eh? I learned that one. And then failing in any case, because it's not based on solid ground, why don't we learn slow down? Why don't we learn to go back to God?
Why don't we allow him to be who he is? Because he said, Jesus, sit down until I, not those people, I have made your enemies, which are the enemies of your children as well, into a footstool for you.
I think I said it last time. We need to stop playing Christianity.
And I know you sit here, just like I would sit here. It's not affecting me. I'm clear. I'm good. I'm on the safe side here.
But I wonder. Sorry, you can be angry with me.
I would challenge you to revisit whether you are really on the safe side with God.
Do you know why? Because I have to do it. I can only ask other people to do what I must do as well. Because I thought I'm on the safe side. I figured it out. Which I did. To such an extent that even what François was saying here now, you know, prophets fail. They think they see it all. No, they see only part. Even I had to acknowledge just a few days ago and time and again that what I see is only part of the story. I mean, we can turn it the way we want. The book tells us it's going to be bad. So why should we try to make it good?
No, what we should try to make is get settled with the Lord to overcome the bad times or to walk through the bad times, because they're going to come. The people don't listen. Even in church, they don't listen. Everybody knows about this. About this, in my church, it's not my church, I would be lying because I don't feel at home there. In the church I attend, for Ruth's sake. Do you think, with all the trouble happening, they want to know?
I don't want to know.
People don't want to know. Do you want to know? Who is in control? Who is lifting up kings? Who is bringing them down? Who is in control of events? Who is in control of your life? Who is in control of what you eat? Who is in control of what you wear? Who is in control of where you live? Who is in control of what you have? Who is in control? You think you are? No, you're not. I think I am? No, I'm not. And I learn it painfully. I'm not. I'm absolutely not in control. There's nothing, absolutely nothing I can do.
How do I wrap this up? So here, Jeremiah it's just close before the Babylonians come and even take Judah into captivity. Jeremiah wants to go out of the city and wants to visit his property. There's an officer who sees him walking out of the gate and he says, "Where are you going?" And he says, "I just want to go to see my property." And the officer says, "No, you're not. You are defecting to the Babylonians." So no matter what Jeremiah is saying, he doesn't listen to him. So he arrests him and brings him to all the people. And they say, "This guy is a bad guy. He really stirs up the people." Now listen, you see, look around you. You only hear stories that soothe you, okay? That make you feel, oh, it's not that bad.
But if you talk about the truth that is coming, then it's interpreted as stirring up the people. So he was stirring up the people so that they would run away or whatever they said, so they imprisoned him. To such an extent that he was about to die, and then some guy had pity on him. You could now dwell on this whole issue that he was about to die and he had to wrestle with God. You said you protect me, etc. But anyway, let's move on. So he had a friend or somebody who believed in him who went to the king and said, "This is not nice. What has he done to you? He's going to die there. Please do something about it." And the king, as evil as he was, sort of took pity on him and said, "Well, pull him out there and let him live in the court, arrested in the court, so at least he could walk around and stuff like this." This is happening. And then after that happens, at some stage, things get really bad. And this king says to Jeremiah, "Come and tell me what is the Lord saying." And here, this is where I want to pick up. So Jeremiah tells him, "Listen, if I give you an answer, will you not kill me?" Even if I did give you counsel, you would not listen. You wouldn't. And then the king promises and says, "Listen, just talk to me. I promise you, I'm not going to kill you. Just tell me what's happening." And he says, "You know, this is going to happen. Either you hand yourself over to your enemy now, then you save your life, or you don't, and then you lose it." Now that has little to do with what we are experiencing at the moment, but what comes then has to do with this. King Zedekiah said to Jeremiah, "I'm afraid of the Jews who have gone over to the Babylonians, for the Babylonians may hand me over to them, and they will mistreat me." So there you go. He has he has gone into wrong allegiances. Some people deserted him, and they might now pay him back for it. So he's now reaping what he sowed. And then Jeremiah said, "They will not hand over you over. Obey the Lord by doing what I tell you. Then it will go well with you, and your life will be spared. But if you refuse to surrender, this is what the Lord has revealed to me. All the women left in the palace of the king of Judah will be brought out to the officials of the king of Babylon. Those women will say to you, 'Hey, they, you know, your officials, they misled you and overcame you. Those trusted friends of yours, your feet are sunk in mud. Your friends have deserted you.'" You see, at the end of the day, everything we put our trust in, if it's not God, it's not going to work out. When times get tough, people desert you. I can assure you, unless you find really a person that is very compassionate and loves the Lord with all his or her heart, when times get tough, people are not going to help you. I'm not going to help you. They won't. Because they look to themselves first. So where do you put your trust in? The systems we have put up. You know, one of my favorites was Jeremiah 2:13. "This I hold against you because you have forsaken me, the well of living water, and have dug your own cisterns. The systems we have created to replace God as our provider, they're not going to hold it. They can't hold it. The water is seeping through. There's absolutely nothing." So perhaps this is the way I can wrap it up. If you want Jesus still to be seated down, then you stand up. Stand up for who he is, for what he represents, for what he can do. If you want to go through these troubled times which are coming, not because I say so, but because God says so, if you want to be on the safe side, then put your trust to 100% into God.
Please don't put your trust into a retirement scheme. Don't put it into any company. Don't put it into any fund. Don't put it into any bank account. Don't put it into any employment. Don't put it into any insurance. Don't put it into any security system. Don't. Do not. Put your 100% into God. There's no other way. No plan B. Then it's no problem when the enemy comes in with all his guns and shouts, "Who does believe in God?" And you think, "Now I'm taken to account. I want to live." So you don't stand up for God. You rather move out because you don't want to die. No, then you can stand up and say, "Well, I, with all my heart, no matter what you do." There's one pastor, and I think I'm closing the 12th times now. 12th time. Anyway. You know that story with the preachers, no? I think I told you, no? Like they are supposed, preachers are supposed to preach like a plane taking off. Get the crowds excited, you know, dwell a little bit on this whole issue, and then bring that plane down. All right? Now, most preachers, they start through again. They just can't bring the plane down. So they drag on and on and on and on. I don't do that. I don't. There's one pastor yesterday. He said, "You don't really hear what's happening in Zimbabwe with regard to the churches, because all you hear in the media is bad stuff." By the way, that's a thought, huh? Why do we believe more what we read in the newspaper than what God is saying here? Interesting thought, huh? Isn't it? Anyway, he said, we have come up, we have met as the group of church council or whatever it's called from both the Anglican, Evangelical, I don't know what it was, and the Catholic. And we have come up with a plan years ago, and we felt we need to put a document together that shows what the people of Zimbabwe would Zimbabwe to be like. So we invited the president and presented him with this thing and asked him, would he be interested in getting such a document? And he said, "Well, you don't have the capacity and ability." And they said, "Yes, we do." He said, "Well, then you go on and produce that paper." So they produced that paper and handed it over to him. I think it was in 2006 or 7 or something like that. And handed it over to him. And he said, "I don't like this language." Because what they had done was they had written all the good stuff the government had accomplished. And then they had written off all the corrupt stuff, the evil stuff they had done. And then in the end they would expound on how they would love Zimbabwe to be. And he said, "You need to change that language. That is not good for a man of God," Mugabe said. So they took the document back and didn't change the language. They just waited a couple of weeks or something like that and handed the same document back to him. And he said, now I see you have changed this paper. I still don't agree with everything, but yes, you may hand it out." So what they started doing is bringing all these this paper with a questionnaire into all the districts where all the pastors were, and they would go to the people and ask them right then and there to fill in this questionnaire so that it could not be manipulated, and collect all the stuff and answers so that they can compile a document that shows what Zimbabweans want Zimbabwe to be like. So they do stuff, huh? And they got this paper, and then they voted somebody in who is a spokesperson, because the president said, I shouldn't really say the president, Mugabe said, "I don't want to talk with everyone." So they chose a young chap who was devoted to the Lord to be the spokesperson. Guess what? No. They bought him. They bought him. They bribed him. They gave him incentives. Now he speaks Mugabe language. See? We think we are on the safe side. But when it comes to essentials, when it comes to what will I live on, do I withstand pressure? Can I stand up for God? Can I stand up for Jesus so that he can sit down? We better get our acts together. What will you do if they arrest you? What will you do if they throw you into prison? What? Will you deny Jesus? What will you do if they take your workplace away? What will you do if the company collapses? You know, in Germany, the car manufacturers, I've never seen it, never ever seen it in my memories, at least not, I can't recall it, that BMW, Mercedes, Volkswagen are shutting down their whole plants for months. I've never seen it. What will you do when you lose your security? What will you do if your retirement fund or insurance that you banked on is going bust because they spent their money on a stock market or whatever that is so corrupt and falls apart? What will you do? Still standing up for God or what? Do you believe he can come through? No, we need to sort out our lives. We really have to. And perhaps that is my gift to you before I leave and never show up again. I don't know. God knows. To shake you. To perhaps sound this wake-up call. Stop making plans of your own. Don't trust in anything that man has made. Because God promised that the wisdom of this world is being shamed by what is foolishness in the world's eyes. But God's foolishness is wiser than even the wisest wisdom here. Can't make plans. Right. I'm glad you're with me. So, any questions? Yeah, I'm awfully quiet, huh? I hope you are. But you knew it would come anyway. When you invite me. Huh? That's the good one, huh? What are you thinking about? Nothing to add, nothing to say. Lord, I pray that you sift out this message and that you burn up everything that is not of you, that you just deposit in each one that's sitting here, even into myself, just what is of you. That we can fall back on what you have said and not what a person has said. And that we can utilize whatever is deposited by the Spirit of God. Because that's life-giving stuff. Would you please do that? I ask in your wonderful name. Amen.